I'd like to call to order on this day, February the 24th, 2016, our joint work session with Fluvanna County School Board. Would you please stand? We will say the pledge in a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Just one note before you kick off the meeting, Madam Vice Chair, your Wednesday meeting next week, remember you've got regular meeting at 4 o'clock, and then as soon as the regular meeting is done, we'll go straight to dinner and budget work session over in the Morris Room. And then the following week, you have a regular budget work session for that week, but I'm wondering if maybe instead of 7 o'clock, you want to move that back to 6 o'clock, because we can advertise that in advance, and still that way people can have dinner before they come, but we can start at 6.
Okay.
So we'll get that the word out on that. So the 9th will be a 6 o'clock work session.
Right. Okay.
And that's all I have.
And this is our first joint work session with the school board, with our new Board of Supervisors. I know you all already know Patricia Beaver, but this is her first sitting with the joint. So nice to be with you.
Yeah.
Okay, and I guess, Ms. Camilla, can you do a little opening?
I can.
All right.
I can. Call our meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Ms. Carr.
Here.
Ms. Mace.
Here.
Ms. Johnson.
Here.
Mr. Rittenhouse.
Here.
Ms. Washington.
Here.
Okay. And we have before us the school board annual budget for fiscal year 2017. So we will let Mrs. Keller,
I'll just have a few words to say.
Right.
First of all, thank you for allowing the school board to come before you this afternoon and share our budget document that was approved and adopted last week at our regular school board meeting. This is a task that is not easy on either board, as we prepare for our school board budget documents, but also as you deliberate and try to decide how to best move Fluvanna forward. And we do appreciate the opportunity to share this information with you. This is definitely a time for us to collaborate and have conversation among the boards, which I think is really important for us to have open dialogue, to talk about the documents and to be able to answer any questions that you may have. The board has, worked, I really feel like we work from year to year. From one time we adopt a budget, and starting from that moment, starting to prepare for the next year and really working closely with Ms. Keller and her administrative team to really fine-tune where the board wants to direct her staff to move forward and how we view our division to move forward. So I do feel that this document is a true reflection of really trying to build upon the foundation that we see our division needs desperately, and to expand upon what services we're already able to provide for our students and the support of our staff. And I think that as we go through the presentation tonight, you'll see within the document that those items do hold true in how we prepare for this budget year.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Washington.
With that, you have, I believe, three hard copies. The first one that you would want to refer to is the Virginia Public Schools Budget Basics. With the introduction of Ms. Patricia Eaker to the Board of Supervisors, and as a reminder for board members, Board of Supervisors members who've already been on the Board of Supervisors, we thought it would be good to give an overview. Mr. Breslau would do that. As to how we are funded, where those funding sources lie, how the money moves into the schools. And please, we would expect that this be a dialogue, that if there are questions along the way, please. And we don't expect this to take really long. The second point of reference, it'll say Fluvanna County Public Schools School Board proposed budget. this information is for you because this is the information in PowerPoint that I presented to the school board. I will not go through this entire document. I always like, though, to give you a hard copy because it has highlights and things that that we're able to speak about that have happened this year that we're proud to be able to, hi, Mr. O'Brien, just in time, that we're able to showcase and speak about. But certainly, as you, you know, flip through this document, you're welcome to ask any questions as well. But what we will do primarily is use the school board annual budget proposal for fiscal year 2017, and I will reference certain pages and you can follow along when it's our turn to speak, and certainly the board can weigh in as well.
Do you want us to ask questions as we go along or wait?
I say as we go along. Okay. I think it's more valuable.
All right.
And because I will tell you, I prefer this work session type of presentation versus me standing and delivering.
Sure. Right.
Quite honestly, I've always liked that I was able to, and appreciate it, I was able to come in November each year and give an update on our school system and let you know how we're doing, how we fared the year before, and where we plan to go. But with the budget, I think this is valuable because it gives our board an opportunity to speak as well on the priorities and how we came to create this budget proposal, and certainly based on a lot of work that started even last summer when our school board adopted a new mission and vision. And that's important. That's not cliche. Those are the things that drive our school vision. So with that, I'd ask Mr. Breslar to go ahead and speak about the what we call the budget basics and an overview of how we're funded.
I'm going to stand up. It's just easier. This is a very fast, this is a boil down of a course that I gave in the early 2000s.
No, go ahead. I'm just trying to make sure she's got you on the
this
mic.
This is an update of a chart that was used for the leadership program, and then for 2 years we offered what's called School Budget 101. So this is going to be sort of a flash version of it. As you know, oh boy, I got another button. This is the normal flow. Local government appropriates the money, goes to the school board. Three big points there are: local governing body, whichever one it is, city, town council, board of supervisors, they appropriate any funds before we can spend them. We don't have the authority in the Commonwealth of Virginia to do this on our own, and we can't expend more than is appropriated by the local governing body. Those are the pretty basics you need. You all probably aware of those. This is an example using Savannah. This was appropriated. With the breakup, the General Assembly talks about for state-designated programs that there's a 55-45% split between the state and the locality. That gets some adjustment by something called the composite index, and they do not pay attention to either other local funds or federal funds on the split. So it's right now it's 51% state, 44% local from the county. And that's just an example of one particular year. Revenue over time, I go back to, I believe that's 2005, and it shows the three bigger things, the three biggest points, which are state, federal, and local. You can see we obviously went through the great rise of the mid-2000s. We had the recession, and then it's sort of coming back up. Also, I've put on there, we have the number of ADM, the average daily membership, which is how we're funded for the standards of quality programs. Drives a lot of funding for other programs too, but it's not the other one. I don't show other local because it's very hard to predict. So for several years, for example, when I first got here 6 years ago now, the practice was that you used a flat amount of $555,100, and it was that way for several years, working first with Ms. Hoover and then more with Ms. Horlocker. We worked up what the other local should be, but since it wasn't a real number in any sense of the thing, that's not on there. So that just shows, that's with the graphical chart and the table at the bottom.
What accounted for the growth in the federal expenditures?
Pardon?
What accounted for the growth of the federal expenditures in 2012?
Oh, that was the ARRA, the
American Recovery Act.
Recovery and Responsibility Act. That was the money that included everything from additional funds. In fact, interestingly enough, to bring that up, some of that state money was actually federal money that the state, by law, by the General Assembly, said, we're getting this recovery money from the federal government, but they were going to designate it as part of the state funding, so even some of the state funding was, but it included some recovery money in the federal government. That's what the majority of that is, and you can see it peak, and it's been driving off. We're still reporting on that in 2016. There's no clear idea whether reporting is going to end, even though the funding was all spent out several years ago. We did get a significant amount of money, obviously, an increase there, and it was coming down. Favetta, for years, has never been a great receiver of federal funds. Some of it's because we're not quite poor enough with regard to free and reduced meals to get more federal funds, because the more free and reduced meals that you have, students you have, eligible students, the more federal programs you easily qualify for. So, for example, if they have a bond offering that QZAB, qualified zoning area bonds, you could get, for example, the higher your free and reduced thing, the better multiplier it is. So when you put your application in, so we just follow the general, one of the more middle class, if you will.
The reduction in state funding between 2015 and 2016, is that primarily due to ADM? Or?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
What's our free and reduced lunch? About 30?
Just between 30 and 31% last year. That's the combined.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. President, let me just ask, are these... budgeted numbers, or are they end of year numbers?
They're budgeted numbers, okay, from the plan. And I could probably put that. I'll probably put that on future slides.
Yeah. The only reason I ask is, I mean, there's some big deep cuts, but I think there's a lot of years where money came, well, like in fiscal year 13, where money came back in the year and brought it back up significantly from what it was. So
I'm from the budgeting school. Talks about this is what the plan was, so this is what we're building the plan on. Because a lot of those funds that come in are not part of the plan. For example, in the first year that Ms. Keller and I were here, we had the federal funds come in for Ed Jobs money. There was nothing involved. We didn't look for it. We didn't plan for it. When we got it, we spent it in December of 2010, because that was a quick turnaround. It's never going to reoccur, so you can show it, but it wasn't part of what we were planning, so that's the way we've looked at it.
Okay. And it didn't, that was a great example, because it didn't impact programmatically what we did for our children. What it did is gave the opportunity for our school board to push back funds to our staff who'd been cut drastically.
Right.
So that's what the Ed Jobs money was used for. So, that's a great example of the influx, and it looks like there's a lot, but absolutely no discretion on our part for that money.
Sure.
Certainly dictated as to where we're going.
So for my board, we have actuals available for all departments, including schools, for expenditures from the last 15 or 20 years. So if you need that anytime, we can pull that up too.
Any other questions?
Revenue? I'm sorry. We have actual revenues and expenditures. So.
Well, we've talked about it going back to the second slide number two. We talked about the appropriations. Governing bodies actually don't do anything about appropriating revenue. They appropriate the expenditure authority, which is supposed to be based off of what revenues we were projected to get. You actually don't vote on how much, what the revenues are. You vote on how much we can spend, and we have to figure out what to do with it. Now we're going to talk about the varieties. One of the really fun ones are the federal revenues, because it obviously comes from the federal government, and as one would expect, no longer aligns with Virginia's fiscal year. Funds are for multiple years, and they typically are. Typically grants, and the most common examples are Title I school improvement. I gave the example of Ed Jobs, or special ed money, which is Title VI. School nutrition program through SALS, that's a USDA program. That's the cafeteria. They're categorical. That means they're specified. They're typically, mainly for staff, but frequently you can't pay for any benefits with those funds. And that varies from grant to grant. And the funds are reimbursed. They don't give us a check up front. We have to go and actually do something, submit a reimbursement request, and then DOE, Department of Ed in Virginia, evaluates the request. They serve as the agent for the feds. And then also typically, in the audit report that, for example, right now Robinson Farmer Cox did, there are certain requirements the federal programs have that are, they have an audit that your auditor does, but we also have audits that are done by other people of those programs. And it's a variety of people. The that ARRA money had a unique set of audit requirements. In fact, there was over $400 million in that program to do audits. And we, in fact, were audited in 2012, and it was a pretty brief audit. So this is just the federal. And how much? You know, our school budgets by law in Virginia are supposed to be set by the May 1st. General Assembly does everything. And how do you figure out how much the feds are going to give you? Well, you really don't have a lot of good guidance. You have to look at what's happened in the past year. What's left over, because sometimes they make adjustments to what they might otherwise give you. Any known changes to allocations? That's typical. If do you have an influx, do you have more special needs students? Because it's Title VI, which deals with special needs students. Is it an ESL program in that title? Is it Title I at-risk students that are also in need? So if you have those, you can have an increase in funds. But we may not even get those access to those funds until well after the start of the fiscal year. Because, for example, the Title I was estimated for the fiscal year budget. So we did the budget last year. We presented it again in February for 16. The application period didn't even open until well after the budget was adopted by the General Assembly. And then we didn't even get notification of what Title I was until the fall. Because it depends on what the feds do. So it's a guess, frequently. An educated guess. And we've gotten a little tighter on, over time on doing the feds.
I would also like to add to that particular realm, there's the, and we've had it happen, there is, and Title VI funds, I guess, is where that happened, where we literally on a Thursday afternoon received an email that said we would have to take $100,000, $106,000, I believe was the exact amount, out of our Title VI budget and allocate it differently based on a pattern that was prior, what, 2 to 3 years prior to that, based on disparity and identification of some of our children into a special ed realm. And so that's the truth. So on a Thursday, literally, I can remember going to Ed in May and said, you're changing this, and you're going to hire this person, or you're going to, here are your options, here's how to use this money. You can hire this person to do this, 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 this. But the data certainly drove that decision, not from our end, but from their end. So it's very, it's just really unpredictable.
Well, but they can do things that are completely off the wall and unexpected.
And typically that happens.
State revenue obviously comes from the state. Two principal sources. We'll talk about general fund, obviously that's from tax revenue. The lottery funds come from the lottery. A little note that people forget, general funds are pretty much guaranteed by statute. If they're, if they're from the general fund, the state's on the hook to give them to you, pretty much. Lottery funds depends on lottery sales, and Ms. Keller and I ran into that as an example, too, shortly after we got here. We were in a meeting, and they were talking about textbooks, because textbooks in Virginia bounce in between, in and out of lottery funded to the general fund. And the question was asked by a superintendent to somebody from the Department of Planning and Budget, what do you do if there aren't enough lottery funds? I mean, everybody was joking because they figured Virginians would continue to gamble that. Well, their actual answer, which wasn't tongue-in-cheek, was, well, if you need $400,000 of books and you're not sure if you're really going to have the money or not, wait until the following fiscal year when you know whether you had the money from the previous year. The General Assembly will probably let you carry it over and then you buy them the year after you need them. So that was an interesting discussion about lottery funds. Another thing about lottery funds is, before I get to the rest of it, there's a discussion that there are additional money. There's been a lot of research and evidence to show that it's, what it's doing is it's actually supplanted general funds over time. And in fact, there's discussion in the House Appropriations Committee report about how they're going to move some more money out of the general fund and free that up, but backfill it with lottery funds. Again, these are not discretionary programs. They're tied to a specific state program. For example, some mentoring. Not governor's school is in there, but there's a number of student programs that are in there. But specifically, the mentoring is one of the unusual ones that actually helps with teachers. Class size reduction, if you have enough children, for instance, is in there for K through 3. So That's it. We get our funds twice a month, and it's done electronically, so that's really good. There isn't a check at the beginning of the year. It actually doesn't start in July. We have a varying amount. It varies over the course of the year. There was a question at the last school board meeting during the budget presentation about how much do we get. It varies because different money becomes available at different times of the year. Obviously, we don't get an ADM allocation until after there's actually any students in school, so we have other funds that are coming in, and that typically in July and early August for us, we're relying on local funds to keep us going until the pump gets primed and the children start showing up and start seeing money. And then that rolls through. So we get that twice a month on those programs. And the use of the funds, we have to report to the state in a detailed report. It's called the Annual Superintendent's Report, or the ASR. Finance directors across Virginia and schools call it something else, but it takes about 100 hours, if you're lucky. Savannah County Public Schools actually submits 3 ASRs. We do one for Savannah County Public Schools, we do one for the governor's school, we do one for Project Return, because we're their fiscal agents. It's a great opportunity to learn details of where money is placed. And there's a second slide on state money, too. And how much? Again, normal circumstances would set by May 1st. The nominal cost share is 55-45, state and locality, adjusted by that thing called the composite index, or LCI, the local composite of the ability to pay, or the local composite index. That's a number that's based on several factors. That's a very long discussion. Standards of quality, those are actually in 22.1. It accounts for 90% of the state funding in dollars, and that covers everything from basic aid. Interestingly enough, in that standards of quality area of the state budget include sales tax dollars, which are not actually under the same model as standards of quality, because they're not based on the number of, on ADM, they're based on the number of school-aged children in the locality. The state lumps them in the standards of quality programs. The other programs are, again, incentive programs, compensation supplements. The governor's school is considered an incentive program. And one of the things that Ms. Keller may talk about, for example, they put a lot of emphasis in it, so we're going to see $100,000 more a year for the 2 years of the biennium and pretty much everybody's budget proposal to go to governor's school. That shows up as part of our budget, but it's not anything the schools can spend on. So, categorical programs, we get about $20,000 in that area. That includes school lunch programs and adult education, which is about $4,000 now. Lottery fund is the second largest. It covers textbooks sometimes. It flips back and forth, even during boost bill year. That's one of the exciting things. School breakfast programs in there, and the special educational regional tuition, which for us is how we pay for the prep program, the Piedmont regional education program. And I say et cetera because there's a number of other little things. That's where teacher mentoring is, class size reduction if you're eligible, and some other small programs. Well, you know where that comes from. It's from you folks. It's not categorical. There's a minimum required local effort required as a match for state funds. Everybody in Virginia, well, almost everybody, I think one division hasn't met it over time. That was an issue. The school division superintendent must certify to the Department of Ed, which then passes it along to the General Assembly, that the requirement is met. Local funds make up for the gaps in state funding, and the match for funding programs is required. It makes up for the gaps in state funding, and it also makes up for the fact that in a state-designated program under the standards of quality, where they do this cost share, where nominally it's 55 state, 45 locality, when that gets adjusted by the composite index, for us it's about 61% state and about 39%, 38% local, 62-38. That's local funding that helps meet that. But in standards of quality programs, the underlying, if we had tabs underneath that to talk about it, they do things on an interesting weighted scale. They determine what a teacher costs for the whole state. And so, for example, an elementary school teacher is worth $47,000 without regard to education or experience. So everybody in the state is looking as though they're paying a teacher $47,000. If you pay more than that, which the overwhelming majority of teachers in Rainier actually with experience beyond 5 years are paid that, the locality is picking up that tab and that difference for both salary and benefits. So that's one issue. High school principals are about $86,000, and there are only about 10% of the high school principals in Virginia that get paid in that range. So those are some of the things that localities pick up for in their performance. So that's pretty good. Other local, this is the fun stuff where you never have any idea what's going to happen because it includes everything else, because other local funds is, even though it could be from the state of Texas, it's still considered another local fund under the accounting guidance we have. So it includes private foundation grants, donations that we receive directly, not donations we receive through the county program, reimbursements from insurance claims, rebates, surplus fiscal agent funds. We actually have twisted crops arms, and we do get some funding for fiscal agent. Okay. So these are just some summary type comments. Federal revenue, it's hard to predict because you don't have any strong guidelines. When I first got to Cubana, I went over and talked to Ed Gillespie, who is the former director of finance in City of Charlottesville schools. I asked what to do, and he says, well, you look at what happened last year. Is anything dramatic happening that you know of? And then just guess what inflation might do, or something in general in Washington. Which I said, well, thanks a lot, Ed. He always likes to give me a hug like that. State can be most predictable of revenues, except this little thing called the caboose bill. And until I got into Virginia finance in the late 90s, I didn't know what that meant. And it's the caboose that falls off the train, actually. Here we are, we've issued our contracts, we've entered into agreements, and the governor issues his proposal in December. And it can dramatically, if you're growing, help you, and if you're shrinking, it can really hurt. And even if you're staying the same, if things seem good, a lot of interesting things can happen. Programs can be moved around. So that can happen, and that has happened over the last 6 years. Local revenue, the predictability varies from locality to locality. Obviously, it depends on the local economy, and it's based on the community's ability to provide funds for investment. Other local revenue, really tough. You may have a really good relationship with a private foundation, so you may have some stability there. But other items such as you can't predict insurance reimbursements, you can't predict facilities use that well. In some localities you can, where they have churches that have signed long-term contracts, but it's not a lot there. And that's the problem. So I have the information there. I left out the slide that goes questions, because it's more exciting. But this is a quick overview, and on our website, I think we still have posted what I used to call school budget 101 information for all the presentations. I know Ms. Johnson went, and Ms. Booker, I know, pretty much were neck and neck to see who could attend most of the sessions in the first year. They were there a lot, and they had some good questions. Okay. And that information is available. So, any other questions?
Thank you. Any questions? Anything anybody want to add? No questions? Very clear. Good. Let me get an A.
It was helpful.
No questions. Wow. Right.
Good job.
Okay.
The operative word was flash. The flash presentation.
Yeah.
Gosh, it was really good. With this particular PowerPoint, I am not going to go through this entire PowerPoint. It's more for your reference. I wanted you to be able to see what I presented to the Savannah County School Board. So I'm going to just showcase a few things. First of all, we're very, very proud of our new vision statement, which was last summer. And I believe we spent about 6 to 8 hours working on, on creating a mission statement that was more relevant, and we do believe that's extremely valuable because this certainly should direct all of our decisions, even our budgetary decisions. And if you, I would highlight, if you look close to the end where it talks about our mission, but it says, and the values needed to reach highest potential and the confidence to make informed decisions that positively impact the future. And it speaks to the needs of a whole child.
versus just a set score on a particular standardized test. Vision statement, our school board, very excited to be able to create a visual that sends a very good message about imagining an engaged, inspired learning every day, and it's not just for our children, it's for every one of us. And we have said, I know I have said, our board has said, we repeatedly say to each other and to our staff members that as you move and start into the school year, you really should be a changed person by the end of that school year through your interactions with each other, through the knowledge, through deepening and strengthening your skills, and through your interactions with the children and community. So those I definitely wanted to highlight. And
you have a thought about putting those words on the marquee that you all have at the high school? I always see Go Flucos. Mm-hmm. And I say to myself, what does that mean? Is that only sports? Or is that your motto, there to engage inspired learning every day? Or even the other one, you say skill, knowledge, that was in your mission. Because the more we see it, we always have learn, this, play, work, place, wonderful place to be. That's our little catchy little thing. So
it's actually, we just started putting that on all of our correspondence and any PowerPoint we do, it starts with those. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I believe Mr. Barlow had this on his marquee. Of course, my pet peeve with that marquee is that it's red.
Yeah.
I want it to be blue.
Yes. Right.
Now, I don't know if that can be changed, but I'll let Mr. Barlow know that we spoke about him a little bit tonight. But seriously, that certainly is a good suggestion.
Right.
Strategic priorities, again, provide meaningful education for the whole child and for every child. And what I appreciate about our board is that this is not a bumper sticker operation. It really is about making this a meaningful education for every child. And I will say probably one of my favorite statements in terms of strategic priorities is the second one, where you establish a culture that's safe and nurturing and allows responsible change and builds confidence in stakeholders. There's no way we can do anything but excellent without changing. And not change for change's sake, but understand that it's a fast-moving world we live in, and we have a huge responsibility to our children and to our staff to grow them. Mm-hmm. Five areas of focus, I won't read all those. We talked about how our strategic focus is how it plays out in the goals that are found in continuous improvement plans. If you notice, it's a little bit of education jargon. But we prefer that it's a continuous improvement plan, a continuous improvement model. It's not about school improvement, it's about continuous improvement. School improvement sometimes seems like a hammer coming over your head. Continuous improvement is what we should all be doing personally and professionally. Our schools, we have approximately 3,500 students. Again, real numbers are different than ADM. ADM, however, is what we're budgeted on. Class size ratios have stayed about the same, a little bit lower in kindergarten, but we always watch those and work real closely with our principals and look through Power School to make sure that we don't have huge overloads. I will tell you, middle school PE is always rocking with a lot of students, and I'm not saying that because Mr. Sheridan is here. We've seen them, and then high school has several classes that I would say they were willing to include more students so that they could trade and open up some other opportunities for students. Demographics, a lot of the same thing you've seen from Mr. Breslar. I will scoot back to this. This year we are one of 37 school divisions out of 132 school divisions where all of our schools are fully accredited. And whether we fully embrace the message that passing an SOL sends, the reality is the Commonwealth of Virginia has established those SOLs. They've been those standards of learning tests and assessments, and the SOLs themselves have been written by teams of teachers and educators across the state. So I believe in those standards, but I also, and I believe I speak for the board as well, certainly don't believe that that one score indicates all the success stories that we see. On-time graduation rate, etc., continues to be really good. I will highlight. I'm skipping through, not to give you a little headache, but just so that you know that I'm not going to beat all this, a few things I'm going to highlight. But I want to tell you something about the dropout rate. Last year, with our dropout rate, we had 0% of our young black students dropping out. That's huge. and that's a laser focus on minority children. Minority is not just black in this community. We have black, Hispanic, Asian, and some who identify with several races, two races, and say that's a success story. One of the things in terms of points of pride this year, we started a Fluvanna County Public Schools Leadership Development class. Ms. Washington was gathering some information at a really great summer conference, and she and I had been talking a year prior to this, and she was gathering info. I was gathering info from several other school divisions, and long story short, we built it, and it's been wonderful. We opened it initially to 20 staff members, and we're sort of a little worried that hoping people would sign up, and we had 30 in about, what, 24 hours sign up who wanted to do it, and it's just great. We've met three times. We meet next week, and then we will follow through all the way until April. Us Flucos, we've had 80 students actually sign a commitment between the middle and high school to say, I want to be better than I am. Basically, I want to be engaged. I want to participate in opportunities, not just sports. I want to look at, soft skills. How do I learn to be better in the job interview, for example? How do I present myself? And so I see some more momentum with that particular initiative. It's not a program. It's more of a mindset. And go through all those. I did include, please take time to look at the STEM areas. We had a wonderful career tech ed / STEM night last Thursday night. We had over 150 people attend, and it was just so well received. Revenue showcases what Mr. Breslau has presented. I'm going to keep going. That says page 20. That's changed. But I do want to talk right here. We want to, for the budget focus, and we'll go to the budget document in just a minute, we want to continue to strengthen the salary scales for all staff and remain competitive. We do look at the surrounding areas. We look at where we fall, whether it's the beginning, middle, or end of the scale, and we've made some headway. We did know that, however, it was going to be a 3 to 4, hopefully not 5 year, but 3 to 4 year process to really raise our scales and to really smooth out our scales. So, and still remain competitive. So it's a lot of work. It's not something you can do in 1 year. We want to maintain commitment to assuring competitive health insurance benefits. And that's huge. I know that's huge for everyone. We want to provide adequate resources. Professional development is important. And it's interesting because the cost of much of the professional development that's available for all staff, teachers specifically, doesn't really cost a lot to go. It may be anywhere from $150 to $250 to register, depending on what it is. You pay less if you send a team. It's having to stay there that costs us so much. It's the travel. And if people have to stay overnight, that tends to cost us quite a bit. Bolster funding for classroom instruction. We've been able to do that each year, especially after significant cuts back in 2012-13, 13-14, and weathering through that. Increased staffing. I'm not going to read any more of this because you're going to see it in the budget focus in just a second. And I wanted to show you that picture just because that's a beautiful picture. Our staff, that was three of our staff members at the end of convocation. And then if you look at the bottom left, I like that the students are really engaged, hands-on. You see less and less of what I call sit and get. And that's really, really important, really, really important. So proud of our teachers to experiment and work really hard to create lessons that engage those students. This is not an easy thing to do. Okay, that's all, Mr. Nichols. If you would open your school board annual budget for fiscal year 2017, this is the budget of the school board.
Do you want the budget page, Ms. Keller?
Please, and I'll give you, if you start with, thank you. Page 22, please. I'm sorry. Would you start on page 16?
Sure.
And we're not going to go from 16 to 16. The reason I want to point this out, ongoing budget and budgetary program scrutiny. Over the years, Mr. Breslau and we started together in 2010, and then over, because you wouldn't find this in the proposal for the budget in 2011-12, but over the years, we've worked to really delve in and scrutinize what programs we have, what's been useful, and how do we know that? Are there things that bring us good results? Are there things that are more efficient? And so that's this is a highlight. It is not an all-inclusive list, but I do think it's an important list. And I also think it sends a message to you as a member of the Board of Supervisors and to our community that we will work hard to scrutinize what we have, because what we may need this year may not be needed in 3 years. And what we need in 3 years may not after those 3 years. So again, just an example of some of the things, some pretty big initiatives or programs, excuse me, that we look at. Then if you go to page 22 in your budget document. And what I will do is I'm going to ask Mr. Breslau to join me with us, and please stop and ask any questions. I'm going to go through, I'd like to go through the document and give you the essence of what each of these requests involve. But then Mr. Breslau has done a really good job. And by the way, this budget request, as Ms. Washington was stating, comes from lots of discussion, even starting in October 2015, about what the priorities need to be and how do we wrap our arms around creating some foundational places and positions and programs, et cetera, back into our system so that we move forward. First of all, in the first area, in the area of compensation, and right now we're watching so closely the House Appropriations and School Finance, Senate Finance Committee, and I know, I believe tomorrow afternoon they'll be voting, right, in the conference. So we've all been watching really closely what those conversations are coming out of those particular committees. Both groups, the House and the Senate, have very different proposals than what the government proposed back in December. As always, though, we start with building our budget on the governor's proposed budget, and then every year since I've been here, we always go back to the board with their recommendation as to what to do once the Board of Supervisors has made the decision and once we know what's coming out of the state. But first, the compensation piece. The total, what's compensation, $520,000. That's what it would cost for us to be able to make some adjustments in our scales. And there are five scales in particular: the nurse's scale, the head nurse scale, the technology scale, scale A, and scale B for our teachers. Scale A is the scale that where we grandfathered people on the scale. Before I came here, scale that was established, but we have smoothed out some of the what we call the big jump scales. It's the jumps where there used to be maybe anywhere from $5,000 to a $7,000 jump in 1 year. So we've smoothed out that scale. Scale B is the scale that started last year. All new employees, anyone who entered Vanna, was placed on scale B. And several teachers, I think it was their 0 year through 8 year teachers, moved to scale B because they had been frozen for so long that our 0 year teachers and 8 year teachers were making the same amount of money. So that's the difference between those two scales. And I'll have Ed talk even more specifically. Do you want me to go on or stop at each section? Go on? Is that okay? And then come back with a question? Okay. Health insurance. Based our budget on a projected 10% increase, we believe in the next few days or a week at the most, we think, right, Mr. Breslau?
Thursday.
Oh, that's wonderful. That we'll have a better grasp, and we are kind of hearing that it might be a little less than 10%, which would be really nice. But it's better to base it. Certainly we were told to project 10% increase, but we're hoping it's going to be a bit less than maybe closer to 7 or something like that.
Just an FYI from my board, we got our figures in Monday morning, and right now it's projected, it's listed at 6.9% on average, but many of the numbers are higher depending on what the plan is. That's before negotiations by our broker, but 6.9% is what ours is, which represents $90,000.
Okay.
Okay,
so our Ed, do you want to talk about the governor's introduced budget about reduced funding for health insurance, why that's there?
What happens is it's both the compensation and health insurance adjustments are because of the reduced average daily membership. The governor's budget projects a drop of almost 70 ADMs. And so even though there might be a little more money, it may have increased a small amount, when, you know, per pupil, the fact that you're taking so many pupils out actually overshadows it. So in this budget structure, going back to several years ago, Mr. Weaver said, you ought to show the offsets. Well, we don't have offsets that deduct anymore, because for the ones where we do have an offset, we would otherwise typically have an offset, because we've lost students and we want to maintain a continuity of instruction. We need to support the both the health insurance, the group life insurance, and the other aspects of VRS because of the drop in average daily membership. That's subtracting faster than the governor added on, and those are the two nets. And when people wonder about that, remember, when we have a $21 to $22 million budget, fractions of a percent are tens of thousands of dollars. So for example, VRS went up 0.6, will go up 0.6 for our teacher category, which accounts for about 70% of our staff, but about 90% of our staff dollars. So that 0.6% went up. So we've got staff to support and do instruction, but because of the drop in average daily membership, which doesn't necessarily translate into a need to reduce staff in our buildings, we're getting less money in the standards of quality part. So the $45,000 in compensation and the $28,000-$29,000 are in the health insurance are what we would need to maintain support for the positions we have in face of the fact that we've lost students. Now, health insurance will be a little better just because we expect the increase from the local choice program is in the 7.5% range. So that's all.
We should know that tomorrow.
Yes, ma'am.
Great, thank you. Staff and professional development, the additional positions in the governor's introduced budget. The governor introduced is providing funding for, in his budget, elementary school positions. And this is not part of the SOQ. These are, again, what they consider additional positions. So A and B, if you look at that, the state funds for additional positions about $154,000. And then the additional positions have the flexibility tied to that. There's been quite a bit of an outcry from superintendents across the state to request that we have some flexibility with positions. And what we mean is that if there is, for example, an SOQ that requires us to hire an instructional aide for the media center or library, but we believe that absolutely we could use a social worker or school psychologist in our elementary schools, then we want to have the flexibility to do that based on the need. So that's where that's how that conversation came to fruition in the budget. And the House and the Senate are both doing something very different with those funds, so we're not real sure, of course, what that's going to play out today. The assumption of the AFRI grant position, that's the computer science position, that last year we said would be funded through the AFRI grant, and we have to assume the cost because it doesn't provide the funds for that position this year. There's the funds become more supplies and materials. The additional professional development, we're looking to continue to increase opportunities again, especially for teachers, but all staff. We have some staff who are interested in taking courses or getting certifications. We have implemented a tuition reimbursement fund, and that certainly links to any professional development requirement that we would have. Positions from school efficiency. You remember 2 years ago, we did a full school efficiency review, and that was through the Department of Ed and the State Department of Planning and Budget. And there were many recommendations made, and we had to meet a certain percentage of those recommendations in order not to pay basically a fee in addition to what it cost to have that efficiency review. Mr. Bresler, you remember what percentage we met? We had to meet
52%. We're going to probably reach in the upper 80% when we're all done in May.
Great. And so we were able to document and prove that we were able to implement many of those recommendations, some that cost us, some that doesn't. But positions that stood out and we thought we needed to place on the table. First of all, the recommendation was based on the age of our buildings and the square footage of our buildings and even the area, the grounds, that there was a recommendation that we hire 12 additional maintenance slash custodial positions. Certainly, we don't know that we could do that, but we have added two to this particular budget. The other position that stood out was the human resource specialist. We don't have a department specific to HR. We have three, actually, people with parts of HR. And at some point, it becomes pretty risky when you have over 500 employees, and with the changes in VRS, the fact that we have a plan A, plan B, hybrid, and any additional changes with benefits, health care, et cetera. Our concern, and I believe the board would echo this, is that we want to make sure that we stay ahead of those type of issues and operate in a professional manner, and certainly have a keen focus on human resources, contracts, benefits, et cetera. Our people do a good job with that, but I would say in terms of the best practice, it can be pretty risky to operate the way that we're operating. Out your needs identified, we're talking about instructional aides for and secondary teacher. The instructional aides, the four instructional aides, actually links to a discussion that I believe I had in 2010 with their school board when I first came, as to when we were looking at priorities, is how do we ramp up support, especially for our elementary school children and our elementary school teachers. So K through four, one of the goals that we've set that we've not been able to meet yet is that we provide a literacy aide, an instructional aide who's trained in the area of literacy, and that we provide one aide for every two teachers. And I think that would be so valuable for our teachers and our children. And it's still a goal that we have, so we're really circling back around to go to ask for something that we believe is pretty foundational. And all of those add together with the offsets from the state to about $435,000. Any questions with that? Okay, and technology. Funding for computers, this is from computers, teachers, laptops, student administrative desktops, instructional support technology, digital projectors, et cetera, $300,000. We had requested in 2 years in a row for the Planning Commission to consider including in the CIP a wedge. I like Mr. Nichols' word, wedge, a placeholder, a wedge, more than a placeholder, $300,000 so that we could create a true replacement cycle and bolster the equipment, the instructional support technology and the equipment that we offer for our students and for our teachers. So with that not coming to fruition, then we have decided to put it in a budget request. Required bandwidth enhancements, there's no offset. It's going to cost us $20,000 to do that. And this is from Mr. Gifford. The cost to replace high school copier contracts, $15,000. That may sound like, well, that's just a little bit, but all those things add up, and so that's why we include it under technology. Into the divisional operating needs, realign instructional materials to the office of the principal. What we'd like to do, and again, these are kind of small amounts that add up. What we did this year is we were able to move the purchase of paper across the entire school division to the division level versus the instructional materials funds from every school being utilized to purchase paper. That's has been really helpful to our principals so they can work with their teachers, and it frees up some money for them with their teachers to use so that it actually hits the classroom. Next year, the $15,000, what we want to do is move that to the office of the principal so that that pays for example, the cost of their student agendas. We're required to actually review and to make sure that our students understand the code of conduct and the rules and the expectations, and we do that by print. We have hard copy, they're called student agendas, but basically they're a handbook. They have a calendar in them typically, and they're pretty costly, but they're required to do that, and it gives us a way with their parent resource book as well for the parents and the students to sign off and know that they've got all of their code of conduct and expectations for the year. The update for travel mileage would cost us about $10,000. We now pay about 33 cents.
33 and a half cents.
There you go, 33 cents a mile. I think we're way off because I think it's about 55 cents a mile is the going rate. So whenever people travel, we would like to move into the current century. projected 4% increase to property casualty workers' comp, that I think is self-explanatory. The other thing we'd like to do is pilot furniture replacement. And I did talk with Mr. Nichols, and I appreciated the response. We also talked about a cycle of a paint cycle so that we could start with the cosmetic needs of our building and specifically start with the middle school. The high school is absolutely stunning and beautiful, but we're going to have these buildings on the schedule of not only the repairs, whether it's HVAC, et cetera, that hits the CIP. We've got to be able to paint these buildings, refurbish our lockers, because we've got, for the most part, very sturdy buildings, and we need to take care of them. Linked to that is the furniture replacement. When you visit classrooms, knowing that it's probably taken us 5 years, especially since we've closed two schools, shut down about 22 trailers, learning cottages, I guess they were called. We brought in all of that. I need you to agree on that. So we brought in all of that furniture and started going. It's taken us several years to go through that furniture, use what is what we would believe is still usable and in good shape, and then to slowly consider the rest surplus and auction or provide it, you know, up for people to purchase in some way or even to give it away. We've got to have some type of replacement cycle so we can get chairs and desks and the things that we would need. We have, you know, 35, almost 3,600 students and 500 employees, and it's definitely the wear and tear over the years. And so our entire budget request is probably, it is the highest budget request I've ever made as a superintendent, I think at $1.7 million. I'll take any questions or clarifications that you may have. Or if the board, our board wants.
I guess the only question I have maybe is with the technology. Again, we go back to the $300,000. I'm not so sure that I understand that. You weren't able to use that appropriation this year. You had to use it for other things, did you not? Was that the way it was, or how did that work?
You raised a good question. We had, I believe our budget request was right at last year, $1.2 million, and we received, is it $850? So when it just like with any budget year, Mr. Weaver, if we don't receive what we request, then we go back to the school board. Our directive from the board is, this is the money now. What, Ms. Keller? What do we need to do with these funds? And so, if we didn't receive the 1.2, and in the 1.2 was $200,000 for technology. Then what we do, which what we did, is we sat down with Josh Skipper, he was the director of technology, and said, okay, we know we have $80,000, so that can you survive on that for a year? What can it buy you? Because we don't have all of this money, and maybe, for example, the BPSA money is for technology and laptops that are used for testing only, but it's not for instructional technology. We can't touch that money to purchase Chromebooks or any kind of technological tools. Pardon?
Digital projectors.
Yeah, digital. We can't provide bright links, smart boards. We can't purchase anything like that unless it's for testing. And so, Mr. Gifford typically have the money we need for testing tools. We're looking for funds for technological tools that really are the paper and the pencil of the 21st century for our children. And that's, again, I know it's maybe unique and it's a very new conversation, but that's one of the reasons that we were advocating with the Planning Commission to get that into a capital improvement plan, because those are tools that are necessary. They're not gimmicky, they're not extra. It really is how our children learn and the tools that they use. So, I think I answered the question.
Thank you.
But you actually returned back to the general fund something like $200,000, is that correct? Or what was it?
$500,000.
And we were able to purchase quite a lot of Google Chromebooks. We purchased a lot of technology. with those funds before we returned.
I guess I'm trying to understand why they were returned, though. Where were you going to spend them? Yes.
My quick answer is this. It is the most difficult thing in the world to know down to the penny how much we're going to end with. And so, I mean, it really, really is, because you're waiting for revenue, and I think even Mr. Dahl and Mr. Breslar probably met every 3 days, or maybe every week, looking at information. So to spend down, it's the first time since I've ever been here that we've had a fund balance where we could make use of those funds to purchase some technological tools or things that we needed, vehicle, et cetera, et cetera. But it's also, we have to be careful. It's also risky when we're not sure almost until the last minute how much money we actually have. Now, I'll tell you, if I knew right now, if I was able to know how much revenue is going to look like, and we knew we were going to have $450,000, then we would be right back at the board. We said to the board, you know, we know it looks like we're going to have a fund balance. These are our priorities. These are the things that we're going to look at. Got the head nod, and we did it. But to be able to spend, and Mr. Breslar can probably say it more eloquently than me, but be able to spend down where you have $100,000 and that comes back to you it's just really hard to do.
But the dollars last year, I mean, I make sure I understand, because I may be saying this wrong. The 550, actually the 615 or something, and then right, we kept 65 for the program, and 550 went back to general fund. But those revenues were not in the budget. They were extra revenues that we hadn't even budgeted for. So you couldn't spend beyond what your budget was unless the board authorized the budget change.
They were below. The revenues were more than we could spend. They were below our expenditure authority. We couldn't spend them because, for example, no one was believing the fact that, again, I budget, and I've talked to both boards before, that I budgeted almost $4 a gallon. I recently presented a chart that showed that. We budget around $450,000 to $500,000 a year in bus fuel. We saved over between $250,000 and $300,000 on bus fuel and over $150,000 on heating oil last year alone. There were other impacts. We had other savings in other accounts because with the drop in energy, other costs dropped off. Our ADM, we budgeted, remember we had a catastrophic the year before. We lost 40 more students than we budgeted for, so we did defensive budgeting. Well, in March of 2015, instead of us falling, even though the budgeted number was lower, we actually finished 3 students, which doesn't seem like much, above what the state projection was. We were planning on losing another 25 to 30 students beyond that. That's between $78,000 and $100,000 there, more than we expected to spend. That stuff doesn't become visible. That doesn't become visible until our numbers are verified in the third week of April, for example. Fuel, you never know, and while we couldn't do it, you have to get through the winter to make sure heating oil works well. Staffing, Mr. Winkler, while we don't have a lot, our replacements were coming in, and the impact of scale B was much more dramatic than expected because we had more people losing, because the salary differential, instead of it being typically on what is scale A now, being a couple of $1,000s over an entire year, it was as much as $14,000 and $15,000 a position. You replace 5 positions, which we did more than that, that's $75,000 that we were saving there. So these things that we did to be conservative and protective led to this money. We spent some money in the last 6 weeks, but
that was up to budget authority.
Right, it was still below the budget, it was still budgetary authority. Because the first thing I look at when I meet with Mr. Dahl, we talk about where are we in respect to budgetary authority. We're always below what we call the red line.
Yeah.
The second part of it is the issue we had, not this past year, but the previous 2 years, where revenue wasn't keeping up. Well, revenue from the state, because we didn't have any ding in ADM and it was actually a little positive, none of that fell down for the first time in 2 years. So we were getting the state revenue we weren't expecting. And in fact, in May, that's when I finally was able to stand. I stood in the board. The board said, well, we've seen this before. But the ADM was supporting it through the month of June, we got that money. So there's a lot of things that we did very conservatively and cautiously that actually worked We didn't expect, we expected some of them to be good, but we didn't expect all of those things to break for us. Do I expect them all to break for us again in any time soon? Not really. But we are, again, we do conservative things. We replace people typically at a lower salary. And again, every time somebody from scale A goes off and is replaced by a scale B teacher, we're having a bigger differential. So we are never going to have people on scale B. With our other salary scales, because we now have salary scales for people, instead of just trying to get into a negotiation and people can play hardball, Mr. Winkler's in the position of saying, well, this is what a director gets paid or a principal gets paid. We can discuss what your experience is, but you don't have a $10,000 or $15,000 negotiating window for people in the schools anymore. That's all lowered our exposure to this. We're learning how this all works because we hadn't had scales. There are only, I think, six or seven people in the division for a variety of reasons that are not on scales, mostly because of where they are going to fall off, and making a scale just for them would be a waste of funding.
Right, very few outliers. But I also think it begs the discussion or the question, because I can tell you when I first came here and Mr. Weaver and Ms. Booker may remember this, when I first came here, I can remember my very first introduction to the Board of Supervisors, and one of the members said, this person's not here anymore, said, no matter what you do, you spend it down. You spend it down to the penny, Ms. Keller. And then 2 years later, then it was, don't you dare spend it down. We want to split it with you, and we're going to create a ratio. So part, it begs that discussion as well, because I will tell you, and I believe our board has supported this, we're going to budget conservatively. We have had trial by fire. We have slid in with a $66,000 fund balance 2 years in a row, and then you know what happened the other years when we did not spend above. Certainly, it's illegal, and we're not going to spend above what's appropriated. But with fuel costs and a lot of what I call the perfect storms, the Board of Supervisors, and you're required to do it, but you certainly did that and helped us meet our demands of our budget. My point is, a little bit of it's theoretical. Is it best, and we've discussed this with our board, is it always best to manage your money so that absolutely you're getting what you need, but as you get to the end of that year and you have some degree of predictability and you still don't have 100%, you just absolutely don't. You don't know that everything's going to hit. You don't know that our last ADM number comes in late March. We don't know until almost mid to late April what that impact is on our budget, and we're going to lose some state money. Right now we're guessing, or estimating, about $165,000.
Yes, ma'am.
Less from the state than had been
in the appropriation.
But with the things that we're doing, we believe we're going to be able to absorb that. That's not something we'd come back and say that we need. But my point is, at some point, I do think it's worth a discussion. Do we, as a school board, know that, and as a school system, with the expectation that we budget conservatively and we're good stewards of our money, and we don't do elaborate things, and there's still needs that need to be met for our teachers, for our children, all staff, then if we know that we're going to have a fund balance, does it beg the question that we know that we'll get some back? Do you see? Mm-hmm. Or is it the mindset, and I believe I know what my board's going to say, we're not spending down to the penny. I mean, we're not going to be that risky.
You can't.
I've talked with one of the, Ed is an amazing finance director. I mean, bright brain for the things that I would not want to worry about all day long. But I've talked with another very bright finance director who said that how close can we be? I mean, when you look at a budget and when you're trying to predict what the fund balance is going to be, he said, you're going to be anywhere between 1% and 3% of your budget. Mm-hmm. He said, and that's the reality. And somewhere in there is going to be what your fund balance, looking at revenues, ADM, impact of all of those things, because we have so many things that drive our budget.
But to be clear, for example, the savings that you had in fuel, you couldn't reallocate them into different areas because you'd already set the budget. So
we could
right. It could come out of our operational budget, and then and with our board's authority, we can move across categories. We just if we have money in the instructional budget, but we can't move across. We can't do anything with something that comes from the state that says this is for teacher salaries.
And our board talked about things like that as we got closer to the end of the year, thinking, you know, is there a way for us to utilize some of these funds that we think we can have, but not spending exuberant amounts of money? But at the same token, we were afraid to do that because there's no guarantee that at the 11th hour something isn't going to happen. Or then you have to try to figure out, okay, is this something that we can have a one-time cost for, because we don't know if the funds are going to be there next year. And I think that's been my voice on the board, is that you have to be so careful about, you know, looking at those funds that we had last year. And we were very excited, but at the same token saying, we can't spend a dime of this because we don't know what's going to happen. And it's not until, like Ms. Keller said, until April that we really get a good picture of what's going to happen by the end of June. But it's a difficult position to be in. And sure, I would have loved to have taken, you know, $300,000 of those funds that looked as though they were going to be there and utilize those for technology and know that we could have a way to start a replacement cycle and be able to put those things back in the classroom that we knew that our teachers and our students needed. But at the same token, it was difficult to say, yes, let's do that.
How much are you budgeting for this year in fuel? In other words, he said $4. He said $4
a gallon.
It's
still at the $4 and four. It's about $450,000, which is around. But the fact is, our last, and I talked to the school board, two invoices ago, we paid $1.05 a gallon for diesel, and we've budgeted not really. It's not only four. It's closer to about $3.60. So we've got that excess there for it. But at the same time, when you look at the chart, some of the changes from July 2nd, 2014 to January 30th, 2016, there were some amazing, interesting hops up and down along the way. Because there's actually two valleys in that. We're in the second, right now we're in what seems to be a second lower valley. But there's a little ridge in the middle there that didn't make sense, and everybody was figuring once that ridge started, we started going back up on fuel costs, that why would they stop? Well, they not only stopped going up, but now they're down, because when I talk to people in the Fredericksburg area and the schools, they're paying under 95 cents a gallon for gasoline and diesel because they don't have to pay the tax. Sure. Our heating oil fell under $1 in the last payment, which is,
unbelievable.
Those are things that you don't, and we talked about this back in November.
Sure.
You don't want to bet on another country's economic policy.
Mm-hmm. But again, to make sure my board understands, last year, I'll just use round numbers. Last year, the school budget was $37 million.
Mm-hmm.
$37 million has to be supported by $37 million of revenue.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What ended up at the end of the year was you had $37,600,000 worth of revenue, but only $37 million of spending authority. So to keep the extra money, we would have had to adjust the budget, and we could have. I mean, this board could have approved adjusting the budget.
We didn't spend to $37 million even. There were two parts to it. One, more revenue came in than we expected, which exceeded the expenditure authority, but it was also didn't reach the limit because we were under it. So there's a couple $100,000 under to $300,000 under to $300,000 over.
But what you would normally do is you'd come towards the end of the year and ask for increase expenditure authority because you had increased revenues, that could have happened. So we could have changed the budget to $37.3 million, and you could have expended that. And if you couldn't get it expended by the end of the year,
right,
the board could have authorized carrying it forward. But I mean, and part of that was you did carry. We did. The
yeah,
board
we
did
carried some of it. Out.
$65K for part of it. But I just want to make sure I understand, because you can spend up to the limit of the revenues that are in the budget.
As long as it's appropriate.
Right. That's what I mean. It has to be probably. If it's not appropriate, that's why you come back to this board to ask to appropriate that extra amount, or they say put it back in fund balance, whatever.
From the May school board on, I was driving Mr. Dahl crazy because we were talking about
it.
He's
not crazy.
Actually, having been in a number of divisions, Mr. Dahl and I talk probably more often, more frequently, and less volatilely than most finance directors do.
That's what it's supposed to be.
That's right.
It's good.
Yeah.
We have our own objectives, but we're still working together. And the thing was, we didn't know how solid this stuff was in the middle of May, and then you're running out, you've got 45 days left. So what do you do? Because even if you get the extended authority, it gets cut off, and that's what happened with the trucks. They fell off the edge of the fiscal year. So we're doing that because, again, there isn't a, for example, that to go back to the $100,000 that Ms. Keller alluded to in the federal, when they took that $100,000 out to say, do this, we had to find $100,000 because we had staff that we had to continue paying, so we had to go scramble that. We can't spend all our time worrying about what's happened in the past, but we do know those things happen, and when you get into the last 60 days of the fiscal year, you don't have a lot of things to do. For example, since our school year ends on the 21st of, the 21st of May, one thing we can't do to save money is furlough the division, which would save us about $150,000. Because after the third week in May, we only have about $25,000 worth of staff that you can really take money away from because they're working. Everybody else has already earned their money in the rest of the year, so you can't furlough them from days they've worked. Various parts of the federal government would come after us really ugly. So, you know, our opportunity to do things with cutting money in other areas is very difficult. And we had a discussion about utilities, and we can't cut back on utilities now. Though we do become amazingly cheap with fuel, but that hasn't been an issue the last 2 years. Before that, we even talked about stripping the tanks out. That we had buried tanks, I think it was at Cunningham or Columbia, where we were going to strip the tanks. Obviously, you don't want to waste your time doing that. But you know, so there's a lot of pieces there. But again, we didn't have the experience of everything working the way we thought it would. I mean, every budget guy tries to do all these things, but no one expects most of them to go the way they actually plan. You know, oh, I'm going to put this in there and that's going to be good. But we didn't touch it. We also didn't spend it because, again, that helps the community. It didn't necessarily help the schools, but that's sort of 2 cents that we didn't spend on the tax rate.
So what was the excess revenues that came in? What was that amount, or say the $37 million?
Well, that was the fact that, for example,
I'm looking for a dollar amount, not necessarily the.
Well, it's probably between $350,000 and $450,000, because that's what would be above the appropriation authority. The other stuff was between $250,000 to $300,000 below, because that's 1%. We stopped about 1% below the expenditure authority.
So your budget was within 1% of your projected budget.
On the one side, and then the revenue just kept coming.
You had another 1% on the upside.
The revenue just kept coming in, which was.
I mean, I think that's important. Right. You know, you think of it as a large number, but on $37 million, 1% is $370,000.
Right. $100,000 is basically a day of operations,
right,
which is pretty scary.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah. So
$150,000 actually with pay.
And I do know, Mr. Weaver, that in because I was at the Planning Commission meeting when the school board was essentially asking that technology be included in the CIP, and the argument was made that it is, as was pointed out, sort of the pens and paper of today, and that therefore it should be included in the budget. I felt like it would be okay for it to be in the CIP because you could use other mechanisms such as proffers and things along those lines, which we don't have in place right now, but that could also be used as a component to make sure that technology was funded. Of course, we know in the CIP, that can also be money that gets shifted from one year to another year, so there's pluses to having it inside the budget. But the proposal by the school board is that you should expect to spend at least, and I think it was even higher amount, I think you were asking for $600,000 previously, that for your replacement cycle in your technology fund, you should expect, you know, to have an expenditure of $300,000 per year, as it puts $600,000.
That's what we talked about.
That's what we talked about.
Said it wouldn't be all in one lump sum.
Yeah, exactly.
And certainly, since Ms. Keller been here, we've never had such good cooperation with everyone. We really worked well together, the finance departments and all. It didn't work that way before she came. It really didn't. And I personally am very, very proud of all of you for the way you work. But, you know, all the time we might not be able to meet the budget all the time, though, and that's the bad part about it. But at least we're working together and trying to understand the budget.
Well, did you have further thoughts on that give and take between when you give and when we take? And so on?
Do I?
Well, does the board? Since it was brought up, we're willing to hear it.
Well, I mean, just speaking from my perspective, I think it would, you know, I think it would be beneficial that as we move, you know, perhaps when we get to March, you know, Ms. Keller comes and provides an update with Mr. Breslauer and says, this is kind of where we are. This is the projection of what we're looking out for the next 3 months, so that we can give you an idea of if we're going to be in the same situation of the revenues and then not, you know, having more in the budget than we expect, so that we can have those conversations and not come to you with over $500,000 and then hoping that we're going to get something and not being able to get those funds back. I mean, I'm happy that the board is wanting to have that conversation, and I think it'd be beneficial for our boards to, you know, perhaps have that conversation in the spring. Again, if we're moving in that direction, because I think it is important for you to know those numbers in advance than, you know, kind of hearing it out in the community or coming to a school board meeting and hearing, you know, oh, it looks like they're going to have this amount of money, but never having that conversation sitting as if we are here tonight, which I think is important.
I agree. I think it is a negative impact when money's returned and, you know, there are perceived and real needs for the schools. And so, you know, without understanding, the average person understanding the budgeting process and the challenges around the budgeting process, it's easy for the community to maybe jump to conclusions and saying, wow, this was really mismanaged and should have been done this way.
And I think, you know, both boards heard that out in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, how can you 1 year come back with such a small amount and the next year you have such a large amount? Mm-hmm. Seems like when the budget was created, your board didn't know what they were doing and how to handle money. And until you start having those conversations with individuals out in the community, it's at that point that they start to understand and it makes sense. And, you know, I think we all know how social media can play such a positive role in sharing information, but it sure can put a twist on things and make it seem as though that the board did not know how to work with the superintendent and her team and how to fund a budget.
And that was my point in discussing the $37 million budget authority versus what's above that. Mm-hmm. I understand you were under budget a little bit because you need to have a cushion. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't get on the 99.9%. That's just not possible in our kinds of budgets. That's really dangerous because people go to jail for that kind of stuff if you exceed authority. But the amount above the $37 million spending authority is really important because that's like gravy. It's like plus stuff. Part of the problem is, though, and that needs to be a good explanation to our community, but part of the problem, though, is if we start using that to then put back in the budget and fund it, it becomes part of the base, mm-hmm. and we have to be careful not to use those monies for things mm-hmm. that are automatically required again the following
right,
year.
Right.
They have to be almost for special project things that are one-time costs, because otherwise you've set the base for next year again mm-hmm. outside sure. of the budget cycle. And so, you know, the rest of county departments, normally when they've got some money, the board has allowed people to carry it forward when it's an ongoing project that hasn't finished and was already approved. But when it's additional funds, additional revenue over what was originally budgeted, we just have to be really careful because it backs this board into the corner of budgeting that same amount next year. Mm-hmm. When you didn't budget for it, now it's not in your tax rate.
Right.
So we just have to be careful. But it was a really good dialogue and conversation. I mean, I'm so thankful that we've got that kind of dialogue back and forth because it makes it easier for us to do our job and keep our board informed, but yes. It's been really good.
I think, excuse me. Go ahead.
I would just say that I would, a couple things I'd like to say. While I believe everyone in here would possibly hope through our conversations even tonight and our exchange with community members, I would also say that I am realistic about the fact that the majority of the people in our community are not going to grasp how we budget. So that's just a given. Okay, so with that, I think that goes back to my original thinking about, I think it behooves us to create at least and articulate a public process for those funds. So I know that Mr. Dahl and Mr. Bredesaw do work, especially, I mean, all year, but especially this time of year when we're starting looking at, we're sliding into home. What's the revenue look like? What's it look like? I know that you had those reports. I know that Mr. Bredesaw had those reports. We report that to the school board. Give them updates. What I would like to be able to do as a superintendent is when we get into that April and into May, be able to say to our school board, with board approval, we would like to, and we've defined what the timeline is, that we come to the Board of Supervisors and say that we project with Mr. Dahl, with Mr. Bredesaw, that we're going to have a fund balance of approximately $550,000. This is what we would like to do with these funds. Because and that conversation starts before it happens, number one. We have, since I've been on the board, we have not, and we've never, and I would never advocate that you take funds like that and buy people and that you pad your budget. It was a fluky thing that happened with the vehicle. The bottom line is we requested the vehicle and it didn't come in until later and it cost the fiscal year. But I think being able to have our school board approve, whether it's technology, whatever it is, another bus or whatever it is that it looks like we need. These are things like Mr. Nichols was saying. These are capital, either small projects or capital expenses. They're not staff. They're not personnel. They're not something that, like you said, would bolster your budget where you do it and then you're having to do it for the next year because you're building that foundation. But I would like to know that conversation would be welcome. And that's my point, that I'd be able to go to our board and the expectations of board supervisors would want us to approach them more than a memo that says we'd like to have the fund balance. But that I think it's reasonable for us to be able to say we'd like to have this money and this is what we want to do with it.
What is for capital expenditures, that's particularly easy from a budgeting point of view, and it does help offset future needs and requirements.
Yes.
In this case, the $550,000 just gave this board more flexibility this coming year. That's one of the reasons why you've got such a big cash fund balance that you can use for various options to find out what the most financially viable is. And that may be extra buses. It may go back to the schools for that. But again, I just caution a great deal of care in funds above budget authority. Using them for certain things absolutely sounds great, but we just have to be really careful not to carry it forward as a baseline budget requirement for next year.
And I would never advocate for that.
You and I talked about it at length. We don't.
We absolutely wouldn't do that.
Well, I think that when the board, when it was presented back to the board that these funds were available, being returned to us, there was sort of that, and you were making the ask for it. There was to some sense that implicit, how are we going to get this back sentiment, and of course as a board we have other demands and needs, but it's it's a reasonable expectation to say, you know, A, we were within 1% of our budget, and B, we had 1% over that came in from other funds. But really, those were monies for the schools in general. And so for the board to then, our board to then use those monies outside of the schools is very, is a very easy and attractive thing to do on the one hand, but I think it's a disservice to the school systems. I would suggest that anything that is above the limit that you have, and when that does happen, and of course it doesn't happen very often, to address Mr. Nichols' point, that that just automatically becomes CIP money, and that's allocated accordingly, because it seems to me that it's almost always there's $300,000 or more of CIP needs on the school side. And that makes that pretty easy to do. You know, it doesn't increase the base, but it's monies that came from the school that can be used to resolve CIP needs. And then, you know, certainly the other portions, maybe there is a split percentage there or something along those lines that makes you feel comfortable about the fact that you weren't spending down, because as you said, you were trying to be conservators, not just for managing the school, but to the community as well, but also knowing that you have you know, the fact that you had a windfall isn't a penalty, that you still have other opportunities in the budget, you know, to have those needs met. So I don't look at the $300,000, for example, on the technology side as I view that as that was a request that has been made many times over the course of the years. It's now part of the budget. If it's not going to be part of the CIP, that's just going to be part of the baseline going forward. I totally get that and think that makes a lot of sense. You know, obviously needs that come and grow on the sides of health insurance costs and things along those lines. Right. You know, those are things that we have to just assume. In most cases, we're going to see that. You know, we're going to see an increase on some side. Whether it's 10% or 6%, it's hard to say. But again, that's a side that says, okay, well, we projected 10%. Mm-hmm. We got this back. You know, here's where this money's coming back into the fund balance. But we're not playing with this big pocket of money that is a school system from a board perspective and expecting, you know, great variations, because I think they are doing a good job in trying to manage their budget, especially once you look at, you know, the fact that 1% is in, they were within 1% of a budget last year, and I think that was pretty much the same thing the year before. They were right within 1% of a budget. Now, the years before that, they came to the board because we cut some of their funding, but I think that that's pretty clear that a lot of the effort that's being made by the school board and the school finance staff is providing a lot of consistency now. That's just kind of my opinion there.
Well, in the end of the year was $65,000 out of a $36 million budget like a couple of years ago. That's not,
right.
Nobody's getting any sleep when that happens.
That's bad stuff. I look at it this way. We appropriated the school a certain amount of money. They didn't spend it all. That money that they did spend is still theirs. We appropriated to them. Thought it should have kept it. We appropriated the fund. We appropriated that money to them. They were good enough for whatever happened that they had money left. It was still their money. If I do my budget this month, and I have money left over, I'm going to put it on in next month, and I'm going to spend it. I've done a good job, and my electric bill didn't come in at a different rate. So, you know,
yeah, I don't really
understand why, you know, the other systems I know have done, they've split it. I know Charlottesville would do it that way. If you came back with $150,000 and you take $75,000, but you had a list of things of you couldn't get in your budget, and you would say to the board of city council, we're going to take out 50% and we're going to take care of these particular items. But we say we trust you. We say we're working good together. We say this is the best we've ever had, you know, with school board. We're really working real hard. So why are we Why didn't your five, what did you all get back, 500,000? 600?
It was 550.
That was your money.
You know, I don't see it that way.
But I know you don't, Mr.
Well, let me explain.
But it wasn't even part of budget authority.
Huh?
It wasn't all part of budget authority.
Yeah.
They didn't have the authority to spend more than
they didn't have. And not only that, why would they, when they save $300,000 or $400,000 on fuel, how do you figure that's half of theirs? That's part of all the taxpayers in this county. It didn't hurt
right
them
the
least
the
bit
school.
that the fuel oil, they budgeted $4 a gallon, and we ended up getting it for a dollar and something. That's what does that have to do with they should keep it? That doesn't make sense.
The school is a part of the county, and you're separating the school from county. You're saying...
Well, I think Mr. O'Brien made a good point. You take that extra and you put it towards CIP. Well, last year we spent $5.1 million to fix the roof on the middle school, thank God. Okay? Now, we still had some... We're having some hiccups with it. I mean, we've had rain the last 2 weeks, and we've had leaks in the daggone gym. The guys have been down there, jumped on it, and fixed it.
It depends on what the situation is. Each of them is different.
Yeah, I was speaking specifically.
Each year would be different.
Each year is different.
And I think one of the things that it's, I think one of the things that it's important is to have the conversation.
Yep.
And I mean, and I value the conversation that just talking about it and recognizing the fact where we came in within our budget and then having those extra revenues. Those conversations, as long as I've been on the board, have not been had. So I appreciate that conversation just even coming up and saying, you know, that yes, you know, as we continue to get closer to the end of our year, that we will come back and have those conversations with you if it is the desire of the Board of Supervisors.
I think it's a part of it is that trust relationship. I mean, first of all, our schools are within the area, you know, at the lower scale in terms of overall funding. And I think part of that is the recognition in the community and the recognition by the school board members of the community as well, that, you know, they need to do everything they can to stay, to keep their budget as tight as possible. And that's always an expectation that you might have. But likewise, maybe if they're over asking, then we don't have trust in them. If they're under asking because they don't trust us, because they expect us not to be, because they expect us not to meet their needs, right? Then they're not doing their job. Part of their job is that they need to advocate for the schools for what they think they really need, not what they think we're going to give them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's their job. And our job is to say, well, here's what we think we can actually give you based on our budget. But there's got to be a lot of trust in between those two things. And I'm not sure that either the conversation or the trust was there. I think it's being rebuilt. But this example of the $600,000 in the conversation that we're having right now is an example of how that trust gets built. You know, I'm all for using that money for other things, as you know. And I've talked about some other needs in our community. It's great to have that. We know that when the initial budget was presented by Mr. Nichols, it was flat on the numbers for the school board, which, you know, in all totality is not a realistic starting budget because they're going to have increases on other sides. If we take this budget and say it's $1.7 million, but they gave us back $550,000, it's really not $1.7 million, it's $1.2 million, which is what they asked for last year. And so those are the kinds of things that, you know, they face challenges, and we face that challenge. But
it might not be 1.2 million.
It might not be, right? It might not be. But I'm saying that's an example of that. And when you look at the areas in which they're presenting their budget, you know, there's not a lot of... there are certain areas that they have very little control over, right? So if we don't fund that, it's definitely coming out of their existing base, if you would. And my opinion is that their existing base is not competitive to the area from a spending allocation dollar. So, you know, it puts us in a difficult position because we're sitting here and we're saying, how do we keep our tax rate at a certain level? But it isn't about us necessarily looking at a tax rate number. It's about doing what's right for the community overall, and it's easy to punish the schools because they are the big number from that standpoint. It's easy to strangle. I don't want to say punish, that's the wrong word. It's easy to strangle
that.
It's
easy
to cut. To strangle.
Well, one of the things when you look at this, you're down over 200 students from the highs and the lows. From what I look at, you're down $1 million in state funding. You've been taken, they've taken away $1 million. Well, that has to be made up someplace. I mean, we still have the schools here. So we're really caught in that alone. $1 million that we've lost in state funding. And that's, I'm wondering still if we've analyzed more why we're losing, continuing to lose students. I mean, we've talked about it before, and I'm sort of still curious if you have any thoughts on that.
I do.
You have a couple of
First of all, in our community, I believe Mr. Nichols gave us a number of how many people actually moved into the community.
Mm-hmm. About 400 since 2010.
Well, you can figure.
Then plus you have
our entire county has only increased by 400.
You have some private schools.
Actually,
that
we've had 34
asked to open up private schools.
I also think that it has a lot to do with the state of public education.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that there are a lot of families out there that are very concerned,
right,
with where public education is going. And just like you said, the state continues to cut the funds that are given to public education, and families are concerned that their children are not going to be able to get what they need sitting in the seats in a public school. And I think that is why there are so many people that not only put their children in private schools here in the county, but will take them elsewhere. I think that has a lot to do with the conversation of charter schools. You know, Virginia is one of the states that is very reluctant of charter schools, and I support the reluctancy of charter schools. Many other states look at things like the governor's school or either CTE programs that we offer within as a part of our public education system. Those are charter schools in many other states. Mm-hmm. Those are academies. So when you start looking at the way, the shape of public education, not just in Virginia, but across the United States, I think there is a lot of fear with how it's funded. Also, with the pressure that we put on our students. I applaud the DOE on starting to have the conversation of the redesign of school, because I think it's important. Because we all know that not every student that graduates is going to a four-year school. Public education is not meant for every single student in our community, and I think we need to be smart about the options that we offer, but also think that we need to make sure that we're providing services to our students who come to public schools and provide what they need, which is up for debate.
And then we get spread out sometimes when we try to do that, because we have this small segment here, a small segment here, and as far as being practical, sometimes it might not be practical. And that's the bad part about it.
Right, and I think that the board is, our school board is often put in a very tough situation as we continue to see students who are homeschooled, students that move to private schools and trying to continue to build that relationship and bridge the relationship as they move from our division to perhaps somewhere else, even to Charlottesville or Albemarle, trying to have those conversations of why. And many times when I talk to parents that I work with, it is because of the fear of where public education is.
If anybody that's sat here and listened to Ed's brief about how school funding works, can only imagine how inefficient the federal government and state government rules have made running a school system. It's incredibly complicated and ridiculous. There's not a lot of guarantees, and I'm not sure that breeds confidence in anybody, because it's so complicated. I mean, if somebody would just sooner or later realize that this is oversimplified, but realize that education is a need and a requirement for a community, then give us money to do that and let us do it, let you all do it, rather than a string here and a string here and pull back on this and pull this and touch this, and you got to have a special program here and a special thing here. Well, maybe you don't need all that. Maybe you need this. But I hear a lot of that in the community, people talking, because everything has strings and ties and complicated. You would never run any kind of, I don't mean you should run like a business or the county government should run specifically like a business, but there's no efficiencies in running a system that way, but we don't have a choice. It's the card we've been dealt.
Absolutely, and we call that, the funding sources, that the funding tail wags that dog.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, again, like Ms. Washington was saying, there certainly are good conversations at the state level and even with legislators that are seeing it a bit differently. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the influx of people into Flubana, and our homeschool numbers are not really any higher than they've been since I came here. The reality is, when we were growing up in school, people didn't have that choice. People have more choices. And the numbers, the decline in numbers tend to hit, for the most part, in kindergarten. You're not required to send your child to kindergarten. And there are lots of, in Flubana, there happen to be several day schools, that have opened up, and mm-hmm. and then people who would keep their child home. And the reality is, and it's not a slight of anybody in this room, the reality is, with the in 2012, and I've had so many even people outside of the community talk about this, when you step back and realize what we've all lived through, when we had sort of that little rug pulled out from under us, thinking we were going to be funded, at least have some funds, and we had a $1.2 million cut, which was really a $2.4 million cut because we asked for $1.2 to build our program. And then that was after the $4.8 million cut from the state the year prior, right before I got here. We cannot even begin to fathom, or we cannot be naive to think that doesn't send a really strong message, not only to your community, but your teachers and your staff, about predictability and about investment. And so, like Mr. Nichols was saying, I will tell you, I know every person sitting with their school board advocates in a very respectful, civilized way, that it really is, it's about investment in education. I mean, investment in education is going to be the string to the vitality in your community. And we've been able to send that message even to people who don't have children in schools. I mean, the connections we've made with many of our retirees and bringing them into our schools, that's a slow but powerful way to build the trust in what we're able to bring for our children. And it sounds cliche and it sounds sappy, but it's the truth. These children are our business. And they get one shot. And I've said it so, talked to family members not too long ago. A lady was wanting to move here. They actually bring her child here and pay tuition. They live in Louisa and want to be here. So excited about the programs, even from middle to high school. What we were talking about, the reality is, our current fifth graders have lived through, if you think about it, their entire educational experience has occurred during the toughest budget crunch ever. They have, their entire educational experience, K through fifth grade, has been with budget deficits, lack of resources, stress to the max teachers, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. Our teachers are phenomenal, and they love our children. And our teachers spend lots of time and money on our children, and we want less and less and less of them spending their own money for their children. But my point is, that has been that child's whole educational experience. Mm-hmm. And I believe we've all been extremely sensitive and cognizant of the economic stresses across our entire community. We have people who've lost their homes and lost their jobs, which plays out. I was a counselor for many years. It plays out. We need school psychologists. We need social workers. We need people who can work with the whole child. So that's why I appreciate the flexibility from the state, and hopefully we get some funds for positions. So back to what Mr. O'Brien said and everyone said, this is a budget that speak to some foundational needs. We've got to continue to build the school system. There's nothing here in Flevanta that makes me think that we couldn't be the finest school system in this Commonwealth, because we have the people and the energy and the wherewithal and the skill set and the love for the kids. But we've got to, as a community, wrap our arms around and invest. Because when you invest and you stand out, all of us are able to say, this is a priority. And it doesn't mean we get every single thing that we ask for. I'm not saying that. But that we invest together and we have these discussions, this is huge. This is huge.
Ms. Keller, so you've got the fiscal year 17 request that's here, the $1.7 million, but you've also got the follow-on fiscal year 18 request of $1.5 million. Do you want to cover some of that while you're here?
Because
that's a projection. Yeah, because
sure.
It's 12 cents between the two asks. Almost 12 cents.
Right, and the compensation piece is assuming that with the governor's budget, that the 2% raise wouldn't even hit until next year. That we wouldn't receive money from the state for the 2%. And again, that's that remains to be seen. So it's a good way, though, to project. We did this, I guess we started this last year or 2 years ago.
Yes.
Well, we projected out so that you can see that we do think farther than just 1 year. Health insurance, again, projected 7.5% increase. We were given information early in the year to project 10% for this coming year, but we still believe we're going to hover around 7. The additional positions that we would include in the governor's budget for fiscal year 18, there would be funds again for additional positions, so 4 elementary and then 2 secondary teachers. We would still work and want to work to continue to have instructional aides, really literacy aides, so that we could meet that goal of 1 literacy aide for every 2 teachers from K to 4. That's included in there. Again, technology as well. And Mr. Gifford does a beautiful job of, he's done a really good job of looking 3 to 5 years ahead. So that would be, again, part of a replacement cycle. Some new materials, technological tools, but then some replacements. Then at the bottom, operational needs, again, I think that speaks for itself.
Mr. Nichols, can you scroll that down a little bit?
Sure.
I don't have my glasses and I can't see in the dark.
It's hard to see in here tonight. I can tell you.
So actually, that's much better for my movie screen.
Yeah.
So as an example, why, if we're going back to the base and we added $300,000 into this year's budget, why would you include an additional $300,000 in next year's budget as part of the base?
Because it's part of a replacement as well.
No, but I mean, in other words, if in the budget, and I'm not saying that $300,000 is the right number. I mean, you came with $600,000, you got $300,000 this year, but that's an example of it's now in the base. You wouldn't expect it to come back up again if it's part of the base.
Because it's in the base, so it's included.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah, I misunderstood.
But that's the second part. That would be the effort to get to the $600,000, because when Mr. Gifford does the total value of the asset value of our infrastructure, he says $600,000, that's the bottom. So when we're doing $300,000, we're not doing a 4-year replacement cycle, we're not doing a 5-year replacement cycle, we're somewhere to the 6-7 year replacement cycle. So this would be trying to capitalize and get closer to the $600,000 that we'd need to get down to a 4.5 to 5 year, between a 4 and a 5 year replacement cycle, which seems like it's not so bad, but again, it's not like your personal computer that doesn't have potentially 4 different sets of hands pushing on the keyboard or touching the screen.
Yeah.
You know, personal computers, some people, if you're not a real computer person who updates every time a new system comes out, you'll hold on your computer for years. We hold on our computer years just because we can't get them replaced more often. But again, in the fall I mentioned the fact we just got rid of our last XP computer over the summer. We hold on to those things until well past their prime. Adding this would be the second part, but that would then get us on a replacement cycle similar to what's happened to the buses, where we went 6 buses for a year before we can drop down to we get the things we need out and then get into, I guess it's four buses a year. Mm-hmm. Most years, with 7 years, you have to go to five, but that's not that often. Around the 600,000, the 622 is just our estimate of what technology and inflation would be. So that would mean you'd have $620,000 to $22,000 in there to fund the replacement cycle for all those things which are not funded through the Virginia Public School Authority technology bonds that Ms. Keller alluded to, the VPSA funding that we use for testing.
So the short answer is you're back to the 600K. You just spread it out over 2 years.
We just spread it out over 2 years. And then it's the base. Yeah.
Per year?
No, it's in the base. The intention would be to spend that money on that each year.
But it would be 600,000
over a two-year period.
So it's about $180 per student that you're spending for technology is essentially the calculation. I think it would be useful, perhaps, to have Mr. Gifford present to our board to explain his technology plan and so on, because it is, one, a large number, and two, as it is, as you put it, as part of the pen and papers of what we do, but I think it would be helpful for the board to understand how that technology is used and the importance of it and the need for it in order to maintain competitiveness inside of the school system. I'd love to hear that. But,
maybe that.
I would like to hear the ideal situation where we should be and how far are we away from that. Because the technology is always moving, it's always something different. But I don't, just to hear where we are and what we're doing, I wanna know where are other systems? How far are we behind? And kind of get off, it's still a subject about the school. I remember, I think the last one school board meetings I came to, and one of your school board members made the statement that they hope they never meet that car again. You know that car you all have, that rusty car?
Rusty.
Oh, is it Bertha? Was it Bertha? No. I met that car the day. Are you all replacing any of those? That must be a mighty good car.
But Bertha
said it's embarrassing when I see that car. It doesn't ride the county.
Buses do that.
Oh.
78.
I think 78.
78.
And we're on what, 20-year replacement cycle?
We're not quite there yet. We're not quite there yet. We will be. Within 2 years, we should be under a 20.
Made some headway.
Yes. Just absolutely. I drove one yesterday, 1989.
Wow.
The thing goes good.
Pretty good, huh?
Like me, it creaks a little. Yeah. It creaks a little. But it runs pretty good.
It's in bad shape then, isn't it?
Depends on who's driving.
One of the best videos I got was a lady who videotaped one of our school buses going Route 15. Actually, we were going down to the bus garage, the maintenance shop, and it was blowing blue smoke. And she sent it. And
she wasn't driving while she was driving.
No, she was parked waiting for her kid to get on the bus. The bus goes by with blue smoke, and she said, "I just thought you should see this." Told her that was the fluke of spirit. It was
like 38A, baby.
And blue smoke and a yellow bus. So. But we're making some headway. And thank you to the Board of Supervisors for that support, because we are making some headway.
Before we leave, I'd like to leave you with one thought about salary. It's such a large part of our expenditure, and we haven't talked about it much. And that is the 5% VRS consideration. That when you look at a salary some years ago, it is automatically 5% less than people are getting now. That's the 5% the VRS required. We give our teachers a raise, and then they immediately took it out. It used to be an expense that the school board paid, and they transferred it on to the teachers. So, for example, in 2010, our beginning salary was about $41,500. If you add 5% to that, which the teachers never saw, don't get to keep, that's over $43,000 without inflation compared to 2010. So if we could get our beginning salary to $43,000 next year, that would still be less than our beginning salary in 2010. Even though the number is more, it's 5% that teacher never saw. So please keep that in mind when you look at numbers and compare past years.
I thought we trued up to meet part of that in the previous budget year, Mr. Nichols. Is that recollection correct or not?
For on the county side, for instance, the employee was assessed a 5% and the county gave the 5% increase.
Well, the schools did the same thing. They did those over several years, 5 years or 7 years.
We did that one year.
So it wasn't offset. In any case, if your salary was $30,000 and we gave them $1,500 more, so now their salary was $31,500, the $1,500 just went straight to VRS. It used to come from the county, but now it comes out of their budget. So there's still a salary of $30,000. Any other increases, though, when the increases come, aren't increased just on the $30,000, an increase on the $31,500, but again, 5% still comes out and goes to there. So the $30,000 base for county staff, school staff, same way, the 5% didn't do anything for anybody. It was just a shift from Eric cutting the check and Ed cutting the check to the state to now the employees.
Yeah.
Essentially cut the check to the state. They paid it.
It makes the salary look a lot better, but it's not real.
Yeah, I mean, when my salary went up the year after I got here, it went up 5%. It's not because my salary went up 5%. It's just because instead of you sending the check to the state, I sent the check to the state. I mean, the county still did it. So it makes the salary look a lot higher. But everybody in the state is in the same boat. So it's all an equal playing field. So while, yes, that's true, everybody's in the exact same situation. Everybody in VRS had to go up 5% on salaries.
But is our teacher's salary?
But it does look artificial.
Are they still competitive? Where are we?
Yes, and we compare to all surrounding counties. I mean, even including Charlottesville now tomorrow, we're definitely more neck and neck with Louisa. There's some pockets that I'd like to see, that we would like to see better. We look at Louisa, Orange, Charlottesville, Albemarle,
Cumberland.
Yeah, it's actually all the salary scales in here, and it's in here.
It's Appendix A.
And there are places where, I think there's a place, maybe even Buckingham, I think, that paid off the memory. You know, where we're not really neck and neck with them. But one of the things that we work to do is that, especially on that 27, 28, 29, you get into your 30th year, that there's a good upswing, because at 30 years you can retire. It doesn't mean you should or that you're going to, but VRS looks at your three highest years and that becomes your average for your VRS payout. So we're trying really hard in those last couple of years to have an upswing. And of course, each year, any time that we can continue to raise that line, we will.
I think it's probably, I looked at it.
Mr. Weaver will
love it. Buckingham.
They're their highest pay that they can get at 15 years. So at the 15th year, they were much higher than us.
But
they never went up anymore. Right. I think it's Cumberland.
Yeah, they do. They stop earlier, right? And then they have to pay.
I looked at that because it caught my eye. And I was like, holy cow, they're like $5,000 more than us at 15 years. But then they never went up.
Well, part of remember, we got three different categories of VRS employees. Ms. Keller's talking specifically about Plan 1. I'm Plan 2, so it doesn't work quite the same way. And hybrid employees don't work that way at all.
That's right.
But from a budgetary point of view, I'm not sure that I'd want to put this in the paper if I'd said, you know, I know they're here, but I mean, I'm gonna give Eric, you're getting close to retirement. I'm gonna give you higher raises your last 3 years, so it increases your retirement pay. Because that's the gift that keeps on giving forever that taxpayers are paying for. So it would be important for me, from county staff, that we're on a very equitable and reasonable glide slope, but don't pack it at the last 3 years just to give somebody an extra retirement pay. You see it in county governments all the time where somebody gets a big pay raise all of a sudden the last 1 or 2 years, and you know exactly what it's for. And I think that I would never counsel the board to do that with county staff, because that's a dangerous, slippery slope. And I don't think that's necessarily our intent. We definitely want reasonable salary scales for our employees that match geographically around here so we can be competitive. We can't afford to be the highest. We sure as heck don't want to be the lowest. But it would be nice to be above average.
Right. So. And that's what we have. And by talking about those last 3 to 4 years, it's not a huge upswing. It's just, you can look at it. I would say it's not a huge upswing.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of a swing, and it's not
Eddie Eagle thing. I just know it's a ski. That ski jump.
It's just for the 28-year teacher.
it's a ski jump, huh?
There's a new movie.
But we want a steady incline. And you know, when we've had the discussions with the staff, who say I'm concerned because maybe the skill B doesn't meet A, or if I'd done this, I'd made this. And the reality is, when I started as a teacher, I made $16,000. That was my first year. And that scale changed every year. And it was always higher than I thought where I was going to be. And that's our goal. We want to do that. The other bit of information I think that you do need to know as a Board of Supervisors is that when we looked at our efficiency, results of our efficiency study, it was absolutely striking and stunning to see the salary scale that they actually recommended we adopt for everyone. We would have had, I mean, everyone mass would have taken exodus. a pay cut.
And we would have had mass exodus.
A drastic pay cut. So, and not in the entire scale, but the majority of that scale. Because what they're looking at is, this is your funding base, and this is how much, this is what your scale should look like based on your, you know, economic resources or fiscal resources. So I appreciate that we can have the conversation, and we can always be candid. Like Mr. O'Brien says, there's always speculation and conclusions drawn, whether it's trust and mistrust, and quite often the trust or mistrust or not trusting at all is because of lack of information and fact. And so I think here's where we need to have those conversations about where do we need to be in 3 to 5 years? And what do we need to do for our staff, and what do we need to do for our children? We're ultimately here for the children. We want to take care of our staff so they take care of the children. There's a book even that says that. Feed the staff so they don't eat the children. So,
would you want to go into detail a little bit more on those four elementary new teachers that you said you were putting on? Is under? Were they aides or teachers?
No, those the four additional positions, if we're able to do that, the state has, what is it, $165,000, I think? Well, I shouldn't say the state, the governor's budget, but I don't...
The governor's proposed, and this is why there's three plans, the governor, the Senate, and the House. The governor, to be simple, said, we want to restore 2,500 teaching, and they're teaching positions, they're not aides, across the state, because during the recession, 10,000 positions went away, so we'll do 20. So very simply put, it's in year one, each elementary school gets one teacher, so in fiscal year 17. In fiscal year 18, his plan is that every elementary school gets one student, and every secondary, one additional teacher, and every secondary school gets two teachers per there. And this is across the state. It's without regard to whether you're getting bigger or smaller, how big your school is, how small your school is. There's no composite index application.
So it makes no sense in that, in a way that Steve Nichols was talking about, some of the regulations then.
It's not just anything else.
They mandate stuff and then say, here's what you got to do, now go do it. Yeah.
But you can, with those teaching positions, you have the flexibility. You don't have to put a teacher in each one of your four elementary schools. And the reason why we say four is because our middle school is actually funded is at the elementary level, because grade eight isn't there right now. What you do is you can put all of them, you can put them where you need those four teachers, but they have to be teachers and or in the teacher scale, and they have to be school-based. They can't be at the division level. So we can't hire a specialist to look over four schools. You have to have somebody who's based in a school.
And it doesn't, and it can't supplant. So if I lose a second grade teacher, I can't use those funds to pay for a new. And teacher means it could be an ITRT, information technology resource teacher. It could be a school psychologist. Cool. So someone who falls in the teacher realm, guidance counselor. So therein lies the result of a conversation for probably 2 years, you know, pleading to give us some flexibility, because we do see a need for school psychologists. We see a need for social workers, for counselors, to work with the socio-emotional needs of our children. So it would have to fall within that teacher scale, that teacher category.
But that would be on a teacher scale, as
yes.
such, someplace.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
So when do we see you all again?
Mr. Breslau will be back here probably every Wednesday until you
come. Keep an eye on us.
Well, we have a school board meeting one of those nights. That's
right. I was going to say, we don't attend y'all's meetings very much because we're always at the same day.
Yeah, we think during our retreat, we talked a little bit about the idea of having some more regular,
yes.
at least once,
mm-hmm.
maybe every 6 months.
I'll tell you one thing that they said at the conference I was at this past weekend. They talked about having Board of Supervisors members and school board members going together to sit down at the schools and talk to the teachers about the budget process and about what things were looking like, just to try and smooth things over and smooth the waters. I thought that, you know, they just said that it's such a great thing to make the process a lot more transparent and to help everyone understand the restraints on y'all, or the demands on y'all and the demands on us, and trying to find a happy medium. So I don't know if we could ever figure something out where we could do that, but that would be a thought down the road.
Mr. Sheridan, one of the, I think, the nicest sessions mm-hmm. with our Fluvanna
yes.
County leadership class was we had Ms. Booker mm-hmm. and Mr. Nichols present really about the Board of Supervisors and what their role is. Ms. Washington talked about the school board, and then we had Dr. Billy Hahn from the Department of Ed mm-hmm. speak about state level responsibilities. And we had so much mm-hmm. good feedback from that because it made sense how it was all connected.
It just gives so much of a better understanding.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And
they get to see it from all three sides right. instead of seeing it from right. one side and yeah. then wondering what the other two sides are thinking.
And those individuals said, I never realized that that's how school budgeting worked.
And even the school board's role.
Right.
That it was
right.
a governance
well,
role.
That's one thing. But I mean, not just y'all. It's as much with us because mm-hmm. teachers are not going to come here. They elect us to come here for them. So anyway, that's just a food for thought.
Yeah, and I think one of the challenges, you mentioned this earlier, in talking about when you're not giving the monies that you're asked for, how you then go back and readjust your budget accordingly. We can take your spending sheet that you have and say, oh, well, we think you don't really need this $300,000 or whatever the case may be, or we prefer that you don't, spend this money this way. But of course, we have no control over that. And so then, next cycle comes around and, the community hears that, our technology is subpar, or that, our teachers are paid too much, or whatever the case may be. And without that sort of feedback loop that says, well, yes, we are making adjustments in this area. Yes, we did implement, a different step plan so that, we're drawing down salaries to be more in line with what they should be, in recognition of salaries being higher, but that's in certain areas. If we're not reminded of that process, it's very easy again for that sort of communication breakdown and for us to simply say, oh, they don't need this, or that, that's an inflated budget. From that end. And so, it is a real challenge when we have budgets presented to us and we have our voters who are saying, what is happening to, your budget? Why is it that our taxes are going up every year? That's a real challenge. And we have to make some hard decisions from that standpoint, which again breaks that loop. So that's one of the things that we talked about in our planning retreat, was to make sure that we kept that communication line open and so that we're pretty much educate and we work together. I think we're overall doing that, but we can do better. Mm-hmm. We can do more of that.
Right. Even formalize, Mr. Nichols and I have talked, and certainly be willing to do this. I present to the Board of Supervisors typically in November, but even having a quarterly presentation that gives mm-hmm. an update and mm-hmm. where we are with their budget right. and what our expenditures have been, and Mr. Breslau and I are here. And even after the budget's set and we make those adjustments and then the board approves, then we come back to say, let's tell you how this played out. Absolutely. I think that's valuable. Absolutely.
When you all do a video of your meeting, is that shown anywhere in community?
Comcast and YouTube, I think. I think it's
Comcast, and is it on?
Comcast is typically what it is.
Can you tell how many people really take time to?
I think you can. I don't look at it because I've been there.
Well, you can gauge the interest in that by how many citizens are here tonight.
Yeah, right.
So we have one citizen representative.
Well, there may be a few citizens that are a little bit worried about it.
Oh, and there's lots of stuff going on tonight, but any night. Mm-hmm. I mean, the last time you had your budget work session was the nonprofits. Mm-hmm. So we're not supposed to tell anybody? Mm-hmm. Oh. Anyway, I can tell you one of the reasons why you know, the rationalization why tax rates go up all the time, because if you look at the yellow line up there, that's Fluvanna. Mm-hmm. The only place you've got to get revenue from is real estate, personal property, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to other counties and resources. And if you take a comparison to a city, Charlottesville City's school budget request this year is $78.1 million. It's more than twice ours, but they're only about 400 different in students.
Right.
But inner city school, you know, mm-hmm. you'll look for money from there, but you also have vastly more revenue. You've got meals tax, lodging tax, mm-hmm. all the different taxes.
You've got cigarette tax.
I mean, everything that cities have the authority to do, well, then that money's used to spend on stuff. Mm-hmm. So they throw a lot more money at schools for some good reasons because of the nature of the population of the schools, but also it's just vastly different. But in our case, as a rural county, we just have never done anything but these kinds of taxes there. And everybody's got those, but we don't have any of the other taxing authority. And not that we necessarily want to do that. It's just a fact. So.
Well, the fact, too, is that there's not that much great revenue actually in some of those either.
No. But there's not much great revenue in the rest of these either, unless we raise them. So, but there isn't. Some of those things you have to do referendums to even adopt. So.
Yep, we're working to change that.
All right.
Well, again, thank you for your time.
I was going to make a note about that graph you just had up there.
Okay, just a second.
And actually, two notes about graphs. One, the graph that you presented about the school spending, the allocations of the different funding sources for the schools, would be, I think, from a perspective of seeing the actual dollar, to have that line that actually shows the total expenditure, so that you know that this local funding, this state funding, this federal funding equals $38 million, and so that you can see that plotted along there, mm-hmm. kind of as an overlay.
I'll show you one of those in a second, too.
But I can't
so this one, local. This is the same one, essentially, that Mr. Breslauer showed, except this one's actual revenues, not budgeted revenues.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, if you look at 2013, where that big cut was, that budgeted one said 12.5. Well, it actually ended up being 13.7. So, I mean, these are actual dollars rather than budgeted dollars. And there's a reason why you look at sometimes budgeted, sometimes actual. But
yeah. And I'm just saying that last line is what's missing on there.
So what was budgeted in 2013?
Well, what was budgeted was 12.54, I think, right, wasn't it, from
right.
the county?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we ended up putting $600,000 back, like, mm-hmm. in May, and then mm-hmm. another $300,000 in fall, and then some other. Mm-hmm. It ended up being higher, but that's over the course of the year, and you can't necessarily count on that on the front end, and you can't necessarily plan for that on the front end. So,
okay.
And mostly that was making up furloughs, you know, costs. So.
Mm-hmm. So what I was going to say on that graph right there is, if I'm reading it correctly, which is good, I like the fact that it's got the funding in $98. But what I don't think is reflected in the third line, the second from the top, is or what's missing, I guess, in terms of the perspective, is the fact that the allocations from federal and state change, forcing the counties pay more. Does that make sense?
Sure.
That
if you go back to here, here's the, yeah. There's county funding only.
Mm-hmm. No, and right, I get that. And what, I guess what I'm saying is you're, sometimes that county funding is being forced upon us because of the state and federal level. So when you look at that slope line there...
We got dark.
You don't... We're so...
Yeah.
Now I'm getting a headache.
We've got one, I don't remember which one it is, but we've got one that shows the local, state, federal, you know, graphed out.
Right.
And where their dips are versus...
Right. No, I was just referring to that slope line on that one graph because you're comparing essentially school spending to non-school spending. But in most cases, and correct me if I'm wrong, from the non-school spending, our budget is not impacted so much by federal and state dollars.
Absolutely true. I'll show you an example. If you can look at this chart, just look at fiscal year 2010 and look at federal funding. And then look at all other years. I mean, other than those 2 years where it was $3.6 million and $4 million, kind of an anomaly, all of a sudden, boom, the act that was during the downturn helped fund some of that, but then it went away. You get these big spikes and valleys, and then if you spend it on things you really need, but they're stuff that you can't then walk away from afterwards, you've just built a base that you got to then fund, and it's dangerous when somebody gives us more money than we would normally get, because we have to be really careful. I mean, schools are, but you can see that. I mean, there's wide variation there. I mean, county funding has just gone steadily up, and it's been on a steady incline because of cost of living, cost of schools. But this is all over the map. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the same with the state funding. I mean, it's been pretty steady the last few years here, but it's hard to figure out how to run a school system, I would think.
Well, and it's challenging for the locality because they've got to make these huge adjustments, and sometimes and they don't make the adjustments, and so what happens is you fall backwards. Which turns around.
Anyway, I'm not sure how this is going to happen or when it's going to happen, but I would very strongly urge the school board members and the superintendent to very, very, very clearly kind of identify some alternatives, because it would be hard to imagine that there would be 12 cents more to schools in the next 2 years. Not that the board can't do that, the board can do that, but there's 12 cents worth of ask there. Mm-hmm. And I agree with some board members said you had to ask what you think you need. I absolutely think so too. I agree with that. But this board is going to have to sooner or later make some decisions on there, and I'm hoping they're decisions that you all can work with and live with. So advocate for kind of the various levels.
We do it every year.
Yeah. Well, but the problem is this year, you really just don't have too much time left. I mean, this board has to set an advertised tax rate on March 16th. Mm-hmm. They've got two work sessions before then. That's next Wednesday and the following Wednesday before they have to set an advertised tax rate. Now, they can go down from that advertised tax rate, but they can't go up. So we're getting, you know, you're close to the edges. So.
Wow.
Then we'll have a closed session.
Thank you all very much.
Do you all need to close up first?
We're done.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll do it.
Did y'all have any damage with the storm here?
We just have no power in there. Not in one side of the courthouse has power, the other side doesn't.
Right.
Okay. School board,
there's no unfinished or new on there in case anybody has anything.
Yes. There is no power in the high school.
When did that power go?
Probably around 4.
Oh, on this one, I marked on there the cents for each level and for both that one and the out year.
Yeah, it's working.
Right.
I just wanted to speak to you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm telling you, I hope you keep feeling good. Yes, in the dark. You finally got away from the fire. Thank you. I would come up with a Andrew and I are in the building today. You know how the flag changes from 180 degrees?
Good to see you again.
Yeah, on one side. Typhoon, same way. When it's coming to you, so on this way, when it's on the other side, you take the lead off the fire.
I made a bomb with black cloud coming and they picked my flag in the air. And I can appreciate that. Yes,
yes. We're looking at the clouds coming in, and when they're all back over,
we're in the opposite way. Yeah. Mr. Chair,
yeah,
also, I'll get it out to everybody, but we changed the budget work session to 6 p.m. on the 9th instead of 7 p.m.
Oh.
Let's just start a little earlier on the 9th. Normally, we do the budget work session at 7. I'll send it out to everybody, but they all said yes to move it to 6 p.m.
Okay. I just got to leave early.
On the 9th?
That's a problem with me going from 7 to 6 to 7.
Those are the only two. Those are the two times you're going to actually have a work session, do budget. Because on the 16th. Maybe, but you got to set the tax rate on the 16th to advertise. Kelly, you can go ahead and shut it down except for the mics. As soon as you can get them all back together, he can read the closed session there, too.
Got my lead. I'm going to have to read some of this stuff here. Nice and dark.
Yeah.
And that type was mighty small. You look at that, some of that type in there.
Yeah.
You're talking about if you're a newspaper.
You want me to cut this on the last line? You got to get in closed session. Seriously. I'm not being funny.
That's why older people get glasses.
Yeah. That's right. That's all right. I'll be all right. Thank you.
That's a
disaster. You're going to have some. What kind of light are we going to have?
It's real shallow.
He's got 3 months. He's been teaching for 10 years.
I thought it was lower down there, cost of living.
Not in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Well, maybe he's in a house.
Oak Ridge?
Yeah. He teaches in
Oak Ridge. Can you tell how much he makes, or you don't want to tell how much he makes?
Just, she said, no, that's not making sense.
I know that.
Anyhow, 10 years ago, he was an executive for the American Red Cross.
But you know,
he was in his coach. They wanted him at the high school.
You know, though, I'd rather make less and be happy with I am. Absolutely. I always chose that. Except for one time.
lot of,
you know, like, yeah.
This was a choice. He had two master's degrees. He had been working in the city executive.
There's a month.
There's a major money. His wife has two master's degrees.
Here, man, boy, got together. That's four master's degrees.
This book around.
Five of them. Okay.
You ready?
That was it. Okay.
Okay, guys. Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move the Susquehanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-37118.1, Section 2.2-37118.3, Section 2.2-37118.6, Section 2.2-37118.7 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, real estate, investment of funds, and legal matters.
Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. I have zero. We are now in closed session.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Susquehanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors do hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting. A second and a recorded vote needed.
Second.
Okay, recorded vote. Ms. Eager.
Aye.
Mr. Weaver.
Aye.
Ms. Booker.
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We have a
motion to adjourn.
No.
Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move that the meeting be extended until midnight.
Okay.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0.
We had a lot of fun tonight.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor of adjournment?
Okay.
Aye.
Remember, pumpkins home.
Next week
is March 2nd. You got a 4 o'clock meeting.
5-0.
And work session directly after.
We'll
do board meeting here at 4 o'clock and work session in the Morse room directly after. We'll have dinner there for everybody.
Oh, boy.